If you're more of a visual learner or you like seeing charts, breakdowns, and exploring other topics, check out our Student Loan Planner YouTube channel. We've got quick explainer videos, deep dives, smart money tips you can actually see in action. Just search Student Loan Planner on YouTube and hit subscribe.
Welcome to another episode of Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm your girl, Lauren Williams, one of the senior consultants on the SLP team. And today I have my whole dream team with me. So if you've been following Student Loan Planner for a while, then you've probably been introduced to Megan and Travis quite a bit. You've seen some of the other consultants come in and out as life is happening. But who is doing your consultations right now? It's the four of us. Let me introduce my dream team. First, we got Glenn. Say hello to the people.
Hey, everyone. Thank you, Lauren.
You may have seen him fairly recently. We've done some podcasts about various topics. And then Jana, we just killed a Parent Plus webinar together. So you definitely know who she is if you're an avid follower of the team. Jana, say what's up.
Hey.
And last but not least, we have Michael Dean. Michael's been on the team for quite a while, but he's been kind of quiet. I would say he's an introvert, but with the number of consultations that he's doing, he can't be. So
No, I don't know why. Maybe I've just been the one stuck talking to everybody individually versus getting to talk to everyone live like this. So yeah. Excited to be here today and be on the podcast.
Yeah, you're going like one to many, whereas you're usually, you're still one to many because you're doing so many consultations, but.
So yeah, most of you probably like, who's Michael? You don't see me enough on the podcast. So that's kind of why we're here today, right?
Yeah. So why don't we start with you? Just tell a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? What are you into? Hobbies? Long walks on the beach? What's your thing, Michael?
Sure. So I lived in the North Shore of Chicago in Glenview, just north of the city. Big fan of fitness related stuff. Before I had kids, used to do Ironman triathlons and that. Now, not so much, because as we all know, for those of us with kids, they kind of suck all your time up. And I have three kids. One of the topics we're talking about today is very dear to me, involving if you have children with disabilities with ABLE accounts. Two of my three children are autistic. So there's some various things that other parents, I hope, are aware of that have children with autism and other disabilities. And very passionate about that. And I would say that's probably enough. I could keep going, but this isn't about me, right?
I got one last question for you before we get into the topics, because you're right. The people want to know what's going on with student loans. But what brought you to Student Loan Planner? Where did your passion for student loans start to come from?
You know, I don't know if you remember, Dan used to be with us way back when, and I've been working with physicians in the healthcare medical device industry for years. You know, he was like, hey, Michael, you're really, really good with talking to physicians. You've done very well with, that industry for years. Why don't you learn all the ins and outs of student loans, and get this certification and help us out? And I was like, yeah, sure.
What year was that?
That was 2023. So it's been around 3 years thus far. I've been with Student Loan Planner doing a bunch of stuff.
Right. It's quite a while at this point. So like I said, you may not have heard him, but he's been behind the scenes making it happen.
For those of you who have seen me individually, there are the 2,500 people that I've worked with have known me, but maybe not our audience at large.
Right. Like I said, the one to many guy, Michael.
Exactly.
All right. Let's get into these topics today. So like I said, I wanted to bring the dream team on, bring us all together so that people can hear the voice of like, what are we actually seeing in consultations right now? Because we are the boots on the ground that are talking to people on a day-to-day basis. There's tons of things in the news. There's tons of things going on. This is going to be kind of a grab bag of information, but it's all relevant because like I said, this is what we're seeing in real time. This is what we're concerned about. This is what we're talking to each other about and making sure that every person is educated so that we can bring well-rounded information to these consultations. So let's start with the Parent Plus borrowers. Jana, like I said, our resident Parent Plus lover of Parent Plus borrowers. What's going on in the Parent Plus world right now?
So many things, especially a lack of communication from the department that there are big changes happening coming up on July 1st, which is probably the bane of our existence, all of us. It's a very frustrating time. We're talking about consolidating to get access to income-driven repayment plans, but there are so many other layers to this about future borrowing, future disbursements of the same loans that you have right now that complicate things, not thinking about qualifying PSLF payments from the COVID forbearance or the one-time account adjustment. So thinking about getting all of that time up to date before consolidating, really important. Or if you have already consolidated, going back and looking to see, is there anything I can count? So there's a lot on the Parent Plus area. The positive news I have been hearing from clients that has taken 3 to 4 weeks from beginning to end of a consolidation application to finish. That is super positive. So shout out to the folks at Advantage that process these consolidation loans because they're getting them done quickly, which is exactly what we need right now.
Absolutely. Fast consolidations are happening for the moment, but you also don't want to drag your feet and be the person trying to get this done at the last minute. They have said to allow 3 months officially on their website. And so they feel like, oh, we've told you guys, you know, hands off. They said for the moment, things are still pushing along, but don't think that you're going to consolidate on June 29th and that your consolidation is going to be done for June 30th. You know, the reality is that there is going to be a cutoff window and you're going to have to prepare yourself for the worst if there is no legislative changes. So don't drag your feet if you are a Parent PLUS borrower. If you know someone that's a Parent PLUS borrower, make sure you need to tell them, hey, it's time to consolidate or to make sure that you consolidate. I actually did a consultation the other day and someone was like, I can't figure out what's wrong. I listened to the webinar and I consolidated my loans and is rejecting it. And that's why I set up the consultation. And it turned out that they had consolidated their loans quite a while back. So, you know, we've been singing the good news of make sure you consolidate, if nothing else, to leave your options on the table, especially because we've been, you know, booked so much lately. It was like sometimes people can't get a consultation on the calendar when they want one, consolidation is step one.
What I'd like to add to Lauren, what you just said there, too, is I've had a few sessions where children of Parent PLUS borrowers have just brought their NSLDS file and submitted it along with, you know, their files and said, do you mind taking a look at my parents' files? And I would certainly invite people to do that as well, just because, like Janice said, the time for urgency and the time for action is now. And I even had one consult just like that, where the focus was supposed to be on the child borrower. And honestly, his session was easy. We got it done in like 15, 20 minutes. But the Parent PLUS borrower was in default, like had no idea about any of these deadlines, like needed to take action immediately and just getting out of default, getting consolidated and all these other things Jana was talking about. So if you're not certain, if you don't know what's going on, if you know a Parent PLUS borrower, encourage them to talk to us.
And one thing I'm going to also add on there's the question of timing. I know they say 3 months. There's also a question of how you submit your consolidation, because for some of you, you might be more comfortable or you might be used to the old paper forms. A big thing that we are seeing is that when everything is done through the online system on studentaid.gov, that's where things are moving quickly. Where there could be delays would be situations where you are using the paper form. So definitely for those of you looking to do it, I encourage you to do that online. The second thing I'm going to say to a lot of people about this is you can always defer to a later date before you enroll into your income-driven repayment plan. Whereas the consolidation, that is a hard deadline. Whereas like you could, and I had a client the other day where like the guy is about to retire. He hasn't retired yet, but he's going to retire at the end of this year, right? So like an income-driven repayment plan would not be fun for him, but it would be fun for him 2, 3, 5 years later. So we concluded, okay, well, why not you just consolidate now? Go to that standard plan. It's not going to be pleasant, but deal with it for a year. And then sometime before the ICR expiration date, you know, make your move into your long game, which is going to be a lot more comfortable for you for when you retire.
Absolutely. So little nuggets for Parent PLUS borrowers. We'll probably end up circling back to them at some point before we're done talking about all the updates for today. But I want to talk a little bit about early auto recertifications and what's been going on there. Anybody want to share a little bit about what they've been seeing in that regard?
Yeah. So with auto recertifications, what Lauren's talking about there is if at any point you have given consent on studentaid.gov for your servicer to just automatically pull your tax return, now that we're starting to see recertifications coming up, and again, recertifications are if you're on an income-driven repayment plan, something other than the SAVE plan at this point, you have to recertify your income once per year. So your servicer knows what your income is and they can recalculate your payments. And if you've given that consent, they're allowed to pull that. And in normal times, what's supposed to happen is that gets pulled, they do their paperwork, and then on your recertification date, that's when your payment changes to whatever the new payment is based on your income. And your next payment due is then going to be your new payment, usually higher if your income has gone up. What we've been seeing now is a rash of servicers where they pull that early, and in some cases, as early as 4 months earlier than your recertification date. They recalculate your payment. And again, most people have seen their income go up, certainly since the last time they recertified, 2 years before in the SAVE plan, or 4 or 5 years in some cases before COVID. Payments are going up quickly. They're going up unexpectedly. And in some cases, it's even moving that recertification date up as well, which in normal times is not a thing that's supposed to happen. So that's a problem that we've been seeing. And I'm sure Jana and Michael will attest to this, but anyone that I've been having a consult with where we see that their recertification date is coming up later this year, I've been having them revoke that IRS consent and then coaching them through how to manually recertify. And maybe someone else will talk just a minute here about, you know, the steps involved in that. But the idea there is that we're trying to protect the people that we're working with from potentially having these negative consequences, because servicers just, honestly, they haven't done this in years. And I think they're dusting off the books and figuring out how to recertify income for the first time in a long time as well.
Nailed it. I think that is the key piece of the puzzle right now. It's like, well, we have to realize we got to give them just an itty bitty bit of grace. You know, when nobody's really a fan of the Department of Education right now, but it was 2018 the last time everything was going normal, or 2019 when things were going normal. Some people still have their 2018 tax return on file as the income that's being used. There are people who have not had to recertify even though they should have had to. There are people who are being forced to recertify when they didn't think they were gonna. It's all over the place. They're trying to bring the systems back online. The systems, you gotta imagine, are full of sludge. The pipes are clogged. New people are here. Like, it is just a mess. So be patient, but also be your best advocate. Be an advocate for yourself by understanding what your rights are, where you should be as far as it relates to recertification and other pieces of your financial puzzle, and then make sure that they implement it in the way that's going to be in your best interest.
I think that's especially important during tax season, right? Do you want them to use 2024 information? Do you want them to use 2025 information? And so revoking the consent, I always say, gives you more control over what they use and when, so that you have a little more work to do, but you also have a little more control over what information they're using and when they're getting that information to recalculate payments. Because a lot of people, you know, recertification hasn't happened for a while, so they're like, let's just file jointly from here on out. And then here's 2025, and we want to file separately. We want to make sure that that 2025 income is used. So that's where having a little bit more control is helpful. The other thing I think we should point out, if somebody did get recertified based on 2024 income, and let's say it was joint and they have since filed separately, they can always go in and request a recalculation. So it's based off of real-time information. So you don't have to wait until your next recertification date to use current data.
That's a very important thing, too. And also, sometimes I've found, Jen, I don't know if you've seen this, I've seen someone who may have filed for 25 where they don't pull the 2025 data right away. And kind of my general recommendation, I almost like taking akin to unplugging and replugging in your internet router, because we've all had experiences with that, is go in, revoke IRS consent, and then re-enable it. And then sometimes it'll work. So I can't guarantee it. But at the end of the day, eventually the IRS is going to update the data. But to your point, Jana, you can easily go in and ask for a recalculation. I know with my clients, I have a little video. It happens so frequently. I have a little video I send everybody.
I think this one is really important for our Parent Plus folks, because that have to make that ICR, the Income Contingent Repayment Plan, that payment is kind of painful. Yeah. So if your circumstances have changed and that means a lower single ICR payment, by all means, submit a new application to get a lower amount.
100%. I think we need to talk a little bit about the PSLF people, because yeah, that makes up a good bit of the people that are doing consultations with us. And PSLF, you know, we love the program, but there are some issues. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the PSLF world. What are you guys seeing there?
I think one thing I want to emphasize about PSLF buyback, it seems like everyone comes in like, oh, I want to buy it back. I want to buy it back. That is only something available to you if and when you have 120 qualifying months of employment. Buyback is a thing, but for those of you who are at the end and would be over the goal line, so to say, definitely look into doing that, but you know, have the expectation that this is going to take a while. And for those of you who are not there, essentially I try to level set my clients from a, you know, a paradigm of thinking like, we're going to hope you have it, but it could be something that may not be there. So plan accordingly, assuming you don't.
Yeah, I think that's especially true with the processing times. I have a lot of people that are like, I'm going to submit it, but I know I have to keep making payments. And by the end, if I just want to be there and be done, I'm going to certify my employment one last time if I don't hear back about the buyback. I think everybody's had enough of the hurry up and wait game while also having to make payments, that some people are just ready to be done with the loans and let's get that $0 balance.
100%. Like, let's keep going.
And one thing I'm going to add about that $0 balance in PSLF, if people ask me, how do I apply at the end? How do I apply at the end? I mean, it's kind of one of those things. The first thing that's going to happen when you hit 120 is it's going to say, congratulations, you have 1 in 20. But then there's going to be this weird, very stressful, like, few weeks where it's still, you're still going to have a balance, but you have 120 qualifying payments. I don't know if anyone wants to add any, you know, tips and tricks for borrowers who are in that very stressful period where they're like, they know they can run away, but they're not there yet.
Yeah, I think that's really insightful. It is a stressful time. Just, you know, trust the process in that case. Stay in contact with your servicer if you have any questions. Usually don't see it, but if you do get a statement for a payment, you can always just request a forbearance and let that process continue to work its way through as well. But yeah, once you see 120 qualifying payments, it's just a matter of it getting processed on the servicer's end, and then your loans will be gone.
Yeah, and they've been processing it pretty quickly lately. You know, it doesn't look like it's taking forever. That's one thing that he said are happening really well. Somebody is working on consolidations and PSLF forgiveness. The other things, hey, you know, buyback, not a thing. There's some other PSLF issues. I don't know if anybody wants to talk about like what's going on with the labor unions or professional employer organizations, or like, you know, when you've got like multiple part-time jobs, there's lots of different things that are happening. Anybody want to provide kind of some context of the other PSLF issues that are happening in this world right now?
Those are some notes that I wrote ahead of time, so I appreciate that segue there, Lauren. And I'll touch on a few of those that you just mentioned, but it really boils down to that if you're pursuing public service loan forgiveness, you should really be proactive about submitting an employment certification form early and often. Best practice is at least once per year and any time that you've changed employers. But if you ever have like a doubt in your mind about whether or not the work that you're doing is going to qualify for PSLF, just go ahead and submit an employment certification form, even if it's literally for just 1 month, and then go and check your account as soon as it's accepted. And you'll be able to then get that peace of mind knowing that it does count, or get that information knowing that it doesn't count so you can act accordingly. And so some of these are just cases that I've seen recently. For the first one, labor unions. That is something that even though labor unions are usually organized as a nonprofit, they're specifically excluded from PSLF eligibility. And so we sometimes see folks who say, oh, I worked for a nonprofit, it's fine. But then you dig in and it doesn't count. Or another one that I recently saw was a doctor in Texas, which doctors in Texas and California are already complicated, and doctors in California and Texas are nodding their heads along right now that they cannot be directly employed in those states due to state law by nonprofit hospitals. But there are exceptions. There's carve-outs now in the PSLF system for that. But this particular person I was talking to was actually employed by a Texas state nonprofit. But the actual like employer signing the checks then was a for-profit in the state. And so unfortunately, there was no exemption. And in this case, it was somebody who had gone for almost 5 years thinking that it was going to count, hadn't submitted a single employment certification form during that time. And then I had to be the bearer of bad news that after we dug in and found the details that unfortunately that time just didn't count. There was no way to get it back. And they had to make a new plan going forward if PSLF was important to them. So really the broad message here, and I'm sure everyone would agree and maybe has their own stories to share, is if there's a shadow of a doubt that the work you're doing counts or that something else might be changing, another case that happens is hospitals sometimes go from nonprofit to for-profit, like just file that employment certification form.
The only thing you personally have to lose is maybe your human resources person getting a little perturbed at you. That is the only thing you have to lose if you send in that paperwork. And another thing I want to add on that, Glenn, is I think we have a lot of clients, at least in my case, Jan, I think you probably, and Glenn, you probably have similar things. I have a lot of clients who come in here doubting the process of PSLF. Well, I heard it didn't work. I tried it 3 years ago and nothing happened. Well, I think one thing we've all observed in our, you know, and I know my time in student loan planning for the past 3 years is there's been a lot of things that in the Department of Education, for its many flaws, they have made a lot of great improvements in certain processes, notably PSLF certification that really went into effect not until the latter half of 2024. So for many people, they may have tried to certify certain past employment maybe in some time in 22 or maybe in 23, and it just didn't show up. If I can give everyone a homework assignment that's listening to the call right now, I would invite everyone to go into their studentaid.gov profiles, see where they stand, really just go dive in, look at each month by month. And if you connect that with your CV and it doesn't have it certified, just go get that done. I've had multiple clients have shown up with me thinking they have 4 years left. I had a client that was like ready to move to Canada, but she's like, oh, I got 3 more years left. I hate my job, whatever. And suddenly we find out she had like 2 years at UCLA and 1 year in like NYU that working for a lab where like we could count. Then I get an email 2 weeks later, I'm done. I can move to Canada, be with my boyfriend, whatever, right? You know, like there's all these great stories by just making sure that you're just up to date on all your previous counts, going month by month in the file to make sure that you're not missing anything.
That is so, so important. I've been working with a couple of physician faculty, and they were like, I was in deferment my whole time during residency, during fellowship. And I was like, because of the one-time account adjustment, let's go look at that history. We're talking 6 years of training, never submitted PSLF paperwork, and magically they have 6 more years of time. Like, that is really how this works. Like Michael said, just try. Throw whatever you can at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I had one like that recently as well, and it was kind of like her file didn't read well. She wasn't really sure. And I was just like, just fill out the form. And it came back 19 payments for like a good bit of the loans and then 24 for the others. And then she's actually a really good candidate for weighted average. So she's going to end up consolidating her loans because there were some other loans that we knew didn't have credit. And it's going to be a better off, you know, overall scenario for her. But you're right. If at first you don't succeed, try again. And if you've never tried, you can't succeed if you don't try. So,
like the consolidation is said before, do it electronically. Everything just seems to flow and work. I had a client today like, oh, I tried PSLF, it didn't work. I'm like, okay, when did you do it? 2022. Okay. Did you do it paper or electronically? Paperly. Ah, okay. All right. That was first thing this morning. And sure enough, it's like, all right, now and then we did like, oh, I've never seen this. I didn't know you could do it online. Yeah, you can.
Which actually is a really good point as well, is that the facelift that studentaid.gov got was during COVID. And so many people kind of tuned out because they didn't have to pay on their loans. And then things came back online and then they stopped again. And like I said, people haven't had to recertify. So there's a lot of people that just don't know what it looks like to recertify their income. They've never done it, you know, before. They've only done it once or twice in their life. And it's been 4 or 5 years since. And they've never worked with the studentaid.gov platform. But they have made tremendous improvements from pre-COVID to present, to where it actually makes a lot of sense to do things online. And it's pretty easy to get it done. So don't be afraid of their online platform. Any other things that we're seeing from a PSLF standpoint that anybody wants to share?
I would say one of them is I've seen some people on the 10-year standard repayment plan thinking that that time does not count, but it does. It's just that we don't think of it traditionally counting because it's 120 payments, just like PSLF is, right? So if you're going through the whole way, you wouldn't naturally get forgiveness. But thank you, COVID forbearance. Sometimes that standard repayment plan actually works out to people's favor because they got a free 3.5 years during COVID for PSLF, and that's giving them the lowest payment right now.
Another thing along those lines, Jana, is for those people who I had a, you know, client, I think it was today, like, well, I make a lot of money now. It's not only going to make sense to get PSLF. With the removal of partial financial hardship for entry into IBR, yeah, you might have 4 years at that 10-year standard rate. But with 4 years left, for instance, I had a client very recently where, okay, yeah, they had 4 years to go on the 10-year standard, but they still were able to walk out the door with $100,000 worth of loan forgiveness. I mean, that's still a great deal. My generic advice there is just because your income is way higher than it used to be and you have access to PSLF doesn't mean you can't walk out the door with a large amount of forgiveness. And I think that comes into a trap is I think a lot of people think, like, well, I already make so much money. You know, my debt's maybe 200, I make 400. I'm way above. I'm 2-to-1 on income to debt. I'm going to clearly pay this off. So therefore, I might as well refinance. Again, that's where you really want to really understand. I think the generic advice is PSLF is a great tool for a lot of people. And with the removal of partial financial hardship, and with the big, beautiful bill, that's going to open up the door for a lot of people. So before you consider refinancing, make sure you're very aware of where you stand in that. And for most cases, PSLF is still very much an option for you.
Yeah, I love that. Be, like I said, your own advocate. You got to pull your head out of the sand. You've got to take action around what's happening in this world. Because if you don't do it, you know, there's not someone who can do it on your behalf. And the thing I'd say is like the number one thing I'm seeing right now are the people who still have their head stuck in the sand. Whether it is never liked my loans, don't want to deal with them. And something has happened that's caused me to book a consultation, or COVID happened and I've just kind of been in denial, or save happened and I've been in denial. There's this group of people that have to pull their head out of the sand and stop ignoring their loans. You've got to come into 2026. Like I said, a lot of changes are happening. A lot of them will not be in the favor of people. And like, I am already like physically ill for the Parent Plus borrower that calls me in July with those unconsolidated loans, because there will be one.
I'm thinking about that in the context of PSLF too. Like, if there's Parent Plus borrowers out there who are thinking that they can just do PSLF for 10 years and be done, but like Lauren, like you said, maybe they have their head in the sand and haven't even considered consolidating yet, or they haven't looked at their loans in a while, or Jana, like you say, they haven't thought about what borrowing for that last semester for their child in the fall might potentially do. Like, it's really important that they thread the needle on those rules to ensure that if they need that PSLF, that they're going to have to take some steps now. Because we were talking about some of the plans that are eligible, but I still occasionally see borrowers who come in on some other fixed repayment plan, like extended, thinking that they're going for PSLF as well. And there's a few different rules for PSLF. And one of them is that you have to be on an income-driven repayment plan, or the 10-year standard, as Jana told us there as well. So it's really important that if you don't know what you don't know, we're here to help you with that.
I want to say, when we talk about the standard and we talk about these new rules coming forward that we're hopefully going to know by May 1st, there's going to be a new tiered standard repayment plan. And even though it has the same standard in the title, that tiered standard is like a hybrid of all of our current fixed repayment plans. And that tiered standard repayment plan, whether you're in the 10-year or 25-year, does not count for PSLF, no matter what. And that's really important to know going forward. You may think you're in a standard plan, but that's not the same as our legacy standard plan that we know today.
Or a consolidation standard.
True. That one too.
That's another one. Oh, well, I'm on the standard plan, or I'm the standard 10-year. Like, no, you're on the standard consolidation. And I think one thing, last thing I'm going to say on the Parent Plus borrowers is kind of per what we're saying, for anyone who wants to, anyone that's considering consolidation, you're going to want to really consider doing it quickly. I think I've been kind of saying April 15th, before April 15th, we can kind of guarantee it's going to get done. Between April 15th and April 30th, probably. After April 30th, it's like, okay, you can give it a shot, but we don't know and anything. And of course, then after May 15th, yeah, good luck. No.
But what do we think about a Hail Mary situation, right? Like, if they don't plan to borrow anymore, what do we do about that? Do we say, let's go for it? Worst case scenario, we're going to be on a fixed repayment plan. Best case, Advantage is on top of things and we get this thing through. I'm a Hail Mary. Like, let's go.
You could have a situation like what happened with the payment count adjustment where they say, well, they come out later and they're like, well, we're going to grandfather everybody in and say, like, as long as you hit the button before the date, we're going to count it. I don't know. But I agree with you, Jana. I'd rather Hail Mary it for the person who shows up at the end of May not knowing about this, who maybe just discovered this podcast randomly. I would say definitely work in the Hail Mary. I mean, what else do you have to lose?
Yeah, like I said, we're all patiently waiting on pins and needles for that language. And we're hoping that the language is going to have some things contrary to what we currently believe. There's nothing we'd like more than to be wrong about some of the really, really bad things that are planned post July 1st. If, you know, like I said, if someone hasn't taken action. So here's to the language saying all the things we want it to say versus all the things we think it's going to say. We just talked about, like you said, consolidation and how important it is for Parent Plus borrowers. But one thing we haven't talked about, and I think Lynn just actually made reference to it, is like, what happens if you're not a Parent Plus borrower and you're in this consolidation period right now? Like, we've been getting some people that have been getting bad advice about consolidation as well.
Yeah, I just had a heartbreaking case. It was somebody who got well-meaning advice to consolidate their loans. And the person said, oh, you'll only lose 1 year of payment credit. And unfortunately, we're in a window of time right now where if you're not a Parent Plus borrower, I think it's really important to differentiate. Like, we're talking about consolidating for our Parent Plus borrowers. But if you are not a Parent Plus borrower, there's a very narrow range of situations where it makes sense to consolidate right now. I think Lauren mentioned earlier the weighted average for PSLF count. Pretty much anyone else is going to have to really like have a really good reason to be consolidating. Otherwise, you shouldn't be. And in the case of this borrower, thankfully, we ran the math on their situation. They had been blessed with a good situation where they have now earned enough income that they didn't need that long-term forgiveness payment count. And it was okay that they lost it in this case. But there's well-meaning people out there. There's a lot of noise out there. There's old advice out there about consolidating. Another one that I'm thinking about right now for our graduates who are going to be graduating in May from whatever program you may be graduating from, you're probably going to hear from very well-meaning colleagues and friends who graduated and other people, hey, consolidate your loans after you graduate and start making payments early. But we're in that window again where if you do that, and kind of like that window of time Michael was saying, like May is a Hail Mary time that you're going to get it done by July 1st. If your loan disperses after that date, you're potentially going to be locked out of some repayment plans and some repayment options that would have been very beneficial for you otherwise.
The biggest difference on that one, Glenn, is the new IBR versus RAP. If you're a post-2014 borrower, you're talking about a 10% discretionary plan at 20 years versus 10% straight income at 30s. So that's 10 years for your non-PSLF people.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Glenn, because I'm working with a lot of graduating medical students, dental students. Of course, their career trajectory is very different. The historical advice has always been, yeah, consolidate so you can get everything on the same page, work to PSLF sooner. But that is just not it right now. You're losing opportunity and options. Yeah, tread lightly.
We've just got to, like I said, pull our heads out of the sand and know what is right based on our particular situation. You were just talking about physicians. That brings me to like thinking of like healthcare workers in general. Let's head into talking about like disability topics as far as like what happens with you if you can't, you know, pay your loans because you are disabled? What happens if you are fully disabled? There's a lot of different pieces of the puzzle as it relates to, you know, the idea, like this umbrella of health. We got a few different topics to talk about. So where should we start in the midst here?
I think let's start with the loan repayment programs. Mm-hmm. Just because we're going off of PSLF a little bit, and we can talk about the state loan repayment programs, the NHSC, the NIH, the health professions. Like there are so many loan repayment programs out there, not the same as public service loan forgiveness, but a loan repayment program is essentially at the federal level or at the state level where they give you a certain sum of money for a time commitment, a service commitment, right? And the cool thing is most of these same folks are eligible for PSLF. And I think it's important to know that you can do both at the same time because one is a passage of time of 120 months. The other one is a service commitment and they can overlap. So why not? If it already is a space, why not have that work for you? I will say I keep getting emails from the NHSC that the site application is open. So if you think you might be a qualifying site, have your administrators work on that and see if you can become a qualifying site because they're looking for more.
And there's a lot of unique programs out there. I mean, I think one of my favorite ones I discovered, if you're a vet, you're cool working with cows in the middle of nowhere, it's a lot of money around for you.
Hey, vets that love cows, right?
Vets that love cows. I had this one client. She was like, oh, yeah, I moved back to my rural hometown in Idaho. And like, I wanted to work on cows. And she's like, gets all this money on an annual basis. I'm like, well, you're going to pay off before PSLF with that money.
Oh, it brings up a really good point about the idea that we really do. We hone in on some of the bigger programs. And it is what's relevant to the vast majority of people. But it is not one size fits all. And there are a lot of different ways to get your loans repaid or to get additional help paying on your loans. And Jana just brought up a bunch of different options that are available to you. So don't think, oh, PSLF isn't on the table for me. There's nothing on the table for me. There may be other opportunities and other situations where you can take advantage of making sure that your loans are paid in the most cost-effective way possible.
Also, let's throw private loans in there, right? These loan repayment programs cover the private section most of the time. And that is such a great way, again, to not use your money, but a program to pay those private loans back because they are not very flexible.
Yeah. And I think to the point that there's a lot of them out there, like we just can't talk about any of them in great detail because there's so many of them and they all vary. So whoever's listening to this podcast, I would encourage you to go just take 5 minutes, go to Google and put in your state SLRP or State Loan Repayment Program and just see what comes up and see if you qualify for any of that based on your profession. It is primarily healthcare workers, usually working in primary care, but it can also be dentists or lawyers or sometimes other professions. And again, it just varies from state to state. And similarly, take your profession and plug that in and say, you know, loan repayment program, LRP, run that Google search too and just see what comes up. Because, you know, if you've been in real estate for any period of time, you've heard OPM, other people's money. That's basically what these programs are. It's like a service commitment, like Jana said, and in exchange, you get to use other people's money to pay your loans. In some cases, I've seen, you know, the overlap with PSLF and this, that the borrower pays $0 out of pocket for their entire time that they're in repayment, just using these loan repayment programs and the PSLF. And next thing you know, their loans are gone. So fantastic program if you qualify.
And the state programs are really awesome because they're usually not taxable income. So what you get is what you get. You don't have to pay taxes on it. The other nice thing is that their application cycles are usually open 3 to 4 times a year. It's not 1 year like our national programs are, but you just keep your application in. Maybe you didn't get the first time, but maybe you'll get it the second round. You just never know.
One thing I'm going to add, though, with all the programs for private debt, just throw the whole thing at it. But for the federal debt, you're going to want to be very strategic in how it is utilized. And you have to look at the terms and conditions of that program, because certain times, certain programs require you to pay the loan directly to the servicer, and then you have to negotiate with your servicer to have that count for certain, essentially in advance, so then you don't just have like one lump sum, then you're still paying out of pocket for the rest of the 11 months of the year. Other programs will allow you to literally deposit that into your own bank account, and then as long as you show that that amount of money left the bank account to some sort of loan-related thing, then you're good. So understand where you stand on that. So if someone does have a program where it's where they only can send it to, let's say, your Advantage account, then you're going to want to make sure you're on the phone with Advantage shortly after that payment is deposited to ensure that it counts as much as you can into the future to then kind of double count that PSLF.
So we've covered a lot of PSLF. PSLF have a lot of healthcare workers in it. We switched subjects and kind of led into other things that exist beyond PSLF for people, you know, not just healthcare workers, like we said, vets and lawyers and whoever that have lots of different types of loan repayment programs. Like I said, in this theme of healthcare, what I think about is people who become disabled. A lot of people don't think about disability and how that is going to affect them from a student loan perspective. And there is a lot to be uncovered there and a lot to understand because, like you said, I think someone was just saying that their client had cancer and, you know, was unaware that that was a thing, that there were different types of options because they specifically had cancer. So let's talk about like what happens when somebody is dealing with some sort of disability or some sort of health issue in general.
Well, there's two things that can happen. We have, it depends on the disability. If you experience some sort of accident or whatever that essentially prevents you, that still, you can still work, but sees a massive drop in your income. That's one impact of a disability, and which is one of the reasons why I'm very reticent to recommend refinancing to many clients, and unless there's a sheer big reason to, as in payoff anyway, 1.5% reduction on interest rate and good health, everything. That's one. And in that case, all you're doing is leveraging the benefits you have with income-driven repayment as is, right? Where you would ask for a recalculation of income drop down. The other option, of course, is total permanent disability discharge. And Glenn and Jana, feel free to jump on in, where if you get cancer, where if you get some sort of terminal thing, such as, you know, as a, for those of you been on consult with me, I love to pick on wherever you are in the country. For our Florida clients, you were bit by an alligator and suddenly, you know, you or a shark and you can no longer, you know, you're paralyzed. If you're, if that happens to you, you can apply for total permanent disability and then essentially they would discharge your loans, assuming that, you know, they process that application correctly.
Yeah. And they have two automatic checks, the VA disability, the SSDI check. But my client recently was diagnosed with MS, which was incredibly unfortunate, but we were going to go one route. And then this information came up and it was a really hard topic to talk about, but I was like, at least we have a positive solution to the student loans. So this can be one less burden because she was very worried about the burden she would leave her children. And so we moved forward with the total and permanent disability discharge and her doctor signed off on it the next day. We got that process going right away. You know, unfortunate circumstances always, but very important that there are opportunities. And to Michael's point, very important that the loans stay federal in that case, because you may not have those protections in the private sector.
And so just to be clear, like, you know, ways to get total and permanent disability would be through the Department of Veteran Affairs, as Jana mentioned, through the Social Security Administration, or through an authorized medical professional. There is a process, there is a site, which the other thing we always encourage people to do, like, yes, we want you to book a consultation so that we can help you organize your finances, but I also want you to be an advocate for yourself. Most of the information, actually all and then some of the information that we're sharing with you, we've read studentaid.gov backwards, forwards, inside out. We're reading the court documents that are coming backwards, forwards, and inside out. But you can go type in total and permanent disability discharge and find the information to understand, does this apply to me? Is this something that might be relevant? I'm disabled, but maybe I'm not fully disabled. I know the first time that I actually took a deep dive into that information, it was for my sister, you know, who was facing a disability. And I was like, what do you actually need to be considered permanently disabled, total and permanently disabled? And we did go through the process. So now I have some, you know, back in knowledge of what this actually looks like to have someone get their loans forgiven. But don't be afraid to, like you said, listen to the topics that we're talking about today and Google them. Go to a government website, though. You're not, don't want to get it from just any old blog or any old place. We don't know where they're resourcing their information from, but we resource from studentaid.gov directly so that we're giving you the information that the government is sharing with you as well. Hopefully in a more digestible format, you know, we like to think.
Yeah, I think that's great. And whether you're staying in the federal system or kind of like Michael said, if you're planning to refinance, a lot of the people we're talking to, they're getting started early in their career. We talk to a lot of young parents. And so if you have not thought about just getting a disability insurance, regardless of your student loan situation as well, it's now is a really good time to be making sure that you're protecting that income, that ability to earn that high income that you invested in yourself by going to school. So now protect that with disability insurance. And some cases, you know, when I'm on calls with folks, I'll sometimes even have them bring up their disability policy if we have a little bit of time and just review that. And frequently find people who maybe they got one, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, and the coverages just don't align with where they are in their life right now. And if they were to get disabled, like, that policy is better than nothing, but it's not even going to come close to covering their lifestyle now. So one of those things that, you know, as you're thinking about your student loans, starting to think about those insurance coverages as well, so you can protect yourself and your family, and making sure that they're adequate is going to be really important.
Glenn, maybe I need to book a consult with you. I need to look at my disability insurance.
We do have resources to help, yeah. So if anyone is out there, we have a team member who'd be able to help get you a policy, get you a quote, if that's something that you have kind of put to the side for a while and want to take some action on.
Yeah, and this may feel like it's going off on a tangent to some people, but like you said, all pieces of your financial puzzle are related. And I think what we bring to these consultations is, like you said, our expertise in the various aspects of, like, hey, let's look at your whole financial picture, because there's a lot of things in play. A lot of people don't realize why disability insurance and specifically is so important is that you are 3 times more likely to become disabled than you are to kick the bucket as a young professional out here in the workforce. So many people are not worried about, they're like, oh, life insurance, life insurance, life insurance, or no insurance, no insurance, because I'm young and I'm healthy. But disability is a thing that people face more than anything else. And it has the ability to change the trajectory of your finances overnight. And you don't want that, like I said, for your lifestyle above and beyond your student loans. So we get just a few more topics that I want to cover, because I think there's some things that are important for us to make sure that we share with people. I want to talk about these ABLE accounts. Michael, you brought them up at the top of the hour. You know, as we're talking about disabilities in general, you know, like I said, ABLE accounts are specific to not the person, the working professional that's getting that is disabled, but for other people. So tell us a little bit about the ABLE account and tell us, you know, about some of the strategies.
Sure. And this is a topic that's very personally important to me, because as I mentioned earlier in the call, 2 of my children are autistic. And it's, you know, understanding the full financial picture. I know we talked about disability insurance. We talked about earning potentials. We talked about all these stuff. Like, understanding your full financial picture really impacts that. And what are the things that are in there? I mean, I've essentially accepted that I'm going to have to be involved in some sort of likely care for my 2 children for probably the rest of their life. And I think many people, many clients, I've connected with many of my clients that are in similar positions. And I think in a value added resource, I've made them aware of it. So what is an ABLE account? I'm sure a lot of us are aware of a 529. You probably heard about that. It's a college fund where whatever money goes in, there's certain state tax benefits. For me here in Illinois, I get up to $10,000, $20,000 married, where I can, you know, essentially deduct against my Illinois state income. But ABLE is a little bit different. It operates very similarly, essentially part of the same family, except you have a broad variety of expenses you can do it. So you put it in, you get certain state benefits, and then it is allowed to grow in the stock market essentially tax-free. For those of you who don't know, when you buy and then sell something later, and if there's a gain, you're paying a percentage of that gain to the federal government. Whereas in the ABLE account, you don't have to. As long as you are using it for a qualified disability-related expense, and the usage of what that means for someone who's disabled is very broad. So that could be housing. That could be a new car. That could be a lot of different things that you can use these funds for that you may not have otherwise known. So let's just say you need to buy a new vehicle, right? And new vehicle, let's just say that has, like, let's say if you have a child who needs, like, you know, one of those ramps because you have a child that's in a wheelchair, a cerebral palsy, whatever it is. Those vehicles aren't cheap. And let's just say you saved in the ABLE account, you needed $50,000. Well, if you saved in the normal stock market, you're paying capital gains and dividends taxes. Whereas if you're saving the ABLE, you're not having to pay those taxes. My point is like, if you're thinking about that, like you're saving good 15, maybe 20% of, you know, that gain on by just utilizing that account, if not even more, depending on what state you live in.
I think this is so important as we think about what the next generation looks like as far as education. We talked at the top of the hour about the idea that the student loan landscape is changing. And what we're always thinking about is that legacy that we're leaving behind, the next generation of people. That, you know, the buzzword within the financial community is always generational wealth. But you need to be thinking about, like you said, how can I care for my children for the long term? And what does that look like? What opportunities exist above and beyond the things that I know about? You know, a lot of clients that I talk to are always like, I don't want my child to be strapped with student loans the same way that I was strapped with student loans. So many of the Parent Plus borrowers are like, you know, I sacrificed, you know, myself in this regard because I didn't want my kids to be buried with this debt. All of the pieces of the puzzle that we are doing and thinking about as we're living life are tied to how can we best care for the people that are coming behind us, that next generation, and whatever their needs or, you know, their abilities or disabilities are, how can we make sure that they are ready to go? So I think this is a really important topic. Thank you for sharing your personal experience, Michael.
And also another thing that people should be aware of is you can roll over funds from a 529 into an ABLE. So like, I'll give an example with my twins. We didn't know that they were going to be autistic until, like, we didn't get the official diagnosis until, you know, a few years, right? And so throughout that time, we had been contributing to a college fund like any parent would that wants to, kind of as Lauren mentioned, not saddle their children with these debt, not have to deal with this stuff, you know, later on. And some nice benefits of that account is, you know, kind of moving into a 529, which is another option to take care of your kids, is that there's a lot of great options out there in personal finance and savings that can make sure that your family is taken care of, you know, in later years that you may not know about. And if you're on a call with us and you have a unique situation going on, especially if we have some time at the end, please bring it up. We're here to help.
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of great information. I don't know. How are you guys feeling? Is there anything that we really, really need to tell the audience to make sure? There's probably like 30 more things we could tell them, right?
Oh, there's a lot of stuff.
The podcast can only be so long. But so, yeah, as we wrap up, let's go with maybe Dana. Do you want to go first with just kind of like your final thoughts on what people need to be thinking about? What's your number one thing as somebody who has those boots on the ground that either you're seeing or you want people to know in this current student loan environment?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is what you're reading, don't always assume the answer is no. Asking is so important. Seeing what is going to be best for you is so important. It's hard to do the right thing right now. So guidance and assistance from people that are seeing this and work with this every single day, so important. And it's not just because we want to see all of you. That's not it. We really do want what's best for you. And with the changes ahead, it's very uncertain and it's hard, like I said, to do the right thing.
Glenn.
Yeah, and I know it's a very stressful time for a lot of borrowers as well. Simultaneously, still a lot of uncertainty, but also more certainty. We know where Parent Plus borrowers are going, what they need to be doing. We know that the SAVE plan is going to start winding down by the end of this year. So I think it really is important to keep your ear to the ground and make sure that you're paying attention to your loans in particular. Not necessarily all the noise, like Jana said, but making sure that you're really thinking about what you need to be doing and not just leaving it all to chance.
One thing I would say as we're sitting here on April 13th, is 2 days before tax day. If you are unsure whether or not you should file your taxes married joint or married separate, just file an extension. You have until October 15th to figure that out. With that being said, you have the option to amend a married separate return to a married joint return within 3 years, but not the other way around. If you have filed jointly for calendar year 2025, come April 15th, it is now in the books as a joint borrower. So if you are in this position where you filed joint for 24 and you don't know what to do in the next 48 hours, just file an extension. You can talk to us in May, June, July, August, September, even early October, and we can give you various guidance on that. So if you're unsure, just file an extension on 25.
100%. I think for me, as those boots on the ground that is seeing these consults day in and day out, don't lose hope. You know, so many people come and they're just like, I'm booking this call as my last hope. I feel so distraught. I feel hopeless. I don't think that I can, you know, go on. I don't understand what's happening. I'm sick and exhausted of these changes. Like, people are feeling really, really disgruntled. And I would say your life is not these student loans. This is a piece of the puzzle of your financial life. This is not make up who you are. You did not make a bad decision to get XYZ education, regardless of what your income is. Don't lose hope and stand up for yourself. The way you stand up for yourself is by becoming more educated. So there is this podcast that you're listening to for free 99. We've got tons of blogs on the website. There is tons of information coming out here, there, and everywhere. If you truly feel like you cannot afford a consultation, talk to a friend, get an accountability partner, start sharing information with the people around you that you care about, because there are 42 million student loan borrowers. So you probably know another person and you don't have to feel like you're alone in the midst of this. Sometimes we get on and it does. It starts as a therapy session because they're like, I'm the idiot that took out $400,000 of debt and I only make, you know, $100,000, or, you know, they talk about themselves like that, very negative language. But the reality is tons of people have done it. Millions of other people have done it. So talk to a friend about it. Own what it is that you've done as it relates to your student loans and make a plan for yourself, because this is not the end all be all for you. You can do this. You can pull your head out of the sand. You can make a plan for yourself, and this does not define you. So that's my two cents as, like I said, what I've been seeing is I want people to come and feel like there is hope. There is a path. You know, yes, we got to pivot. You know, I used to say like death and taxes are two things we can count on. Now it's death, taxes, and student loan changes. I feel like the four of us are going to have a job for quite a while. It's unfortunate, but we're going to help you pivot. And you're going to have to continue to pivot, but we're not going to do nothing. And you're not hopeless. There is tons and tons of hope. All right. We will be back to you all soon. I hope you all enjoyed the episode with my dream team. I am so excited to be able to work with these three. Like I said, when you book a consultation, you get one of the four of us right now. We are the boots on the ground. We are excited to be able to serve you. We're looking forward to seeing you on our calendar. Or we're looking forward to seeing your friend, your cousin, your family member, because once again, I always say it, sharing is caring. And there's a lot happening right now to where you should be wanting the people around you that you care about to have this information. Until next time, this is another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. See y'all soon.
Thank you for listening to this show. If you are not already getting our weekly newsletter every Thursday, you are missing out. We break down student loan news, updates, money tips, all in one helpful newsletter. Sign up for free at studentloanplanner.com/newsletter if you're not already getting these important weekly updates every Thursday.